It's Life and Taxes on the Talk Station, FM 107.1. And joining us this afternoon, we have Andrew Foster of Harvell and Collins, where he is, one of his practices is the issue of taxes. So looking forward to this conversation. Again, to remind you, with Harvell and Collins, and I always like to remind you to go to the website, Harvell and, spell out the word and, please, harvellandcollins.com, or give them a call locally, 252 area code 726-9050, 726-9050. And with that, Andrew, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Lockwood.
So what's on tap today?
Well, Lockwood, we know in the world of taxes that timing is everything.
Right.
And I had someone, you know, visit my office here in the last couple weeks with a letter from the IRS with an interesting timing situation that I thought I would want to bring to our listeners' attention.
Mm-hmm.
And really the focus of today's program is on the statute of limitations relative to audit of a return. So obviously the A word, the audit word, people are concerned about that. And one of the big things is how long does the IRS have to audit your return? So that's always a question that we get, and wanted to give the listeners an answer as to when the audit period can start for a tax return.
Okay.
And Lockwood, the general rule is that the IRS has 3 years to audit a tax return.
Mm-hmm.
And there's exceptions, and we're going to get into that, but the general rule is 3 years. And the timing is interesting on when this 3 years actually begins.
Okay.
So, as we all know, this year our tax filing is delayed till April 18th, but normally the tax filing date is April 15th.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to go with that date for purposes of illustrating these examples. So if you file your tax return, Lockwood, before April 15th, then your three-year period for audit actually runs April 15th. So it's kind of interesting. So if you file during those first, 4 months of the year, basically,
mm-hmm.
then you're deemed to have filed on April 15th for purposes of when the audit period starts.
Okay. All right.
Okay. If you get an extension of time, so a lot of times, we've advised our listeners, probably better to get an extension of time if you're waiting on tax documents.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure you have everything that you need before you file. If you get that extension of time and you make that extension of time filing, you get an extension to October 15th. If you file within that period of time, you're deemed to have filed on October 15th, and your three-year audit window starts on October 15th.
Okay.
All right. If you just fail to get an extension and you file after the April 15th deadline,
mm-hmm.
then your three-year audit period actually runs from the actual date of when you file your return. And remember, like we've talked about it before, mailing is filing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's when did you get that that return e-filed, or when did you get that return postmarked to the IRS? Those are the critical dates if you have filed and you're late filing without an extension,
uh-huh.
about when the audit period actually starts.
All right.
So there's your three-year beginning period. That's your normal general stock rule, 3 years. There's a six-year rule, Lockwood. So this is where we have a situation where you substantially understate your income. So generally what this means is that you've left off of your return more than 25% of your gross income. So, hypothetically, if you earned $200,000, but you only reported $140,000 of income for that particular year, you would fall into this category as a substantial understatement of income, and the IRS then would have 6 years versus the traditional 3 years general rule to audit your return. So you got to be very careful when it comes to what income you're reporting. And it's why we talk about, waiting to get all those 1099s, waiting to get all those W-2s.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure that when you file, you're getting all that information, because if you fail, if you understate your income by more than 25%, well, you just expose yourself to three more years of potential audit.
Wow. All right.
So they need to be cognizant of that. And that's where I want to get into kind of our example for the day, because okay. That was the individual that I met with, you know, here recently. He came into my office, and met with me, and the issue he had was he had received a letter from the IRS, and it said, "We believe that you did not report all of your income for tax year 2008.
Wow.
And here we are, Lockwood, we're in what year?
2023. Yeah. Whoa.
So my first instinct was, wait a minute. The general rule or audit is 3 years.
Uh-huh.
So can the IRS even assert that you have failed to report certain income going all the way back to 2008? And then I read the letter closer and looked at it and saw that what the IRS was asserting is that this individual failed to include $36,000 of income.
Mm-hmm.
And then you look and see what they reported, Lockwood, and you quickly see that, oh no, that $36,000 of unreported income was a substantial understatement of income. It exceeded the 25% of their gross income.
Okay.
And so therefore it put them into the what? The six-year rule.
Right.
For audit. So, you know, it looked like a very positive situation at first, because I'm sitting here thinking the IRS has overstepped their bounds. Mm-hmm. And remember, you need to bring up the statute of limitations, Lockwood. If they're out of line relative to what they're asserting, it's, you know, your responsibility. We talk about the tax law being so much different than a criminal law proceeding. You know, where a criminal law, you're innocent until proven guilty.
Right.
And unfortunately, in the tax world, it flips. The taxpayer is almost guilty until you assert your innocence.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and one of the key things that you can assert in these type of things is statute of limitations, and saying that, look, you had your chance, IRS, but you failed to do it during the time period that's allowed by the law to assert these claims, these deficiencies. And, you know, just it's unfortunate in this situation that the understatement of income was just exceeded that 25%, you know, and I had to tell the individual out of one of those, I'm sorry, you know, the statute of limitations argument isn't going to help you in this regard,
right?
Because, you know, they do have 6 years versus 3 years due to that substantial understatement of income.
Uh-huh.
Now let's go on and let's see, are there any other arguments? You know, are there any other ways that we could try to keep this out of income so you don't end up having to, you know, pay the tax?
Uh-huh.
So, but obviously, you know, the first analysis is there a timing? Is there a timing issue? Is there a way that we can get this issue resolved by saying you're too late? Because remember, Lockwood, statute of limitations is an absolute bar. That is a winner. Okay. All day long, if the IRS oversteps their bounds and you can prove they did not act within the requisite time period. So, you know, it's very helpful for our listeners to hear these things, because if you end up in a situation where the IRS has sent you a letter relative to audit and you're wondering, what are my defenses? You know, number one on the list is there a timing issue? You know, can we assert statute of limitations and say, IRS, you had your chance, but you didn't do it timely, therefore you're out. And guess what? If you're right on that, Lockwood, you're right. And you're going to be, you're not going to have to pay any type of deficiency or anything that the IRS may assert.
This, so in essence, you're now working from the perspective of how possibly for this client to determine if there's another way to ameliorate this problem. Am I correct on that?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. So you flip from a is there a timing issue to now is there a factual issue that we can use?
Okay.
You know, is there something else that we can do to, you know, number one, see if the income can we avoid having to include that income into your return? Okay. And if we can't avoid you putting that income into your return, did you make sure that you took all of the deductions that you take?
Right.
You know, because now that you have this income, maybe you weren't that worried about it before because your income was less and maybe you know, your tax burden was lower and you're like, I'll just take the standard deduction or I'll just, do this because it's easier. But now all of a sudden you're looking at staring at, substantially more income on your return. Have you taken all your deductions? Are there any credits that are out there that maybe you could use to now defray from that? You know, that's the analysis that you get into after you first look at, is there a timing problem? Because again, it can be an absolute bar to the IRS, and it can be an absolute winner for the taxpayer. You know, you just need to look at those issues first and foremost. And again, if you don't assert it, Lockwood, and the IRS sent me a letter, I guess I owe the money.
Right.
I should probably just send them a check or enter into a payment agreement.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's kind of the wrong mentality. It's always the first question is the first question I ask every client when they come in with a letter from the IRS. You know, do you think that you owe it?
Right.
You know, do you think that there could be a problem here? Then we start looking into, the actual issues. But I mean, that's the kind of first question that we hit on is see that this could be correct.
Right.
And, it's interesting because sometimes you get the answer, yeah, I probably do. Or sometimes you get the answer going, I really don't think I owe this, Andrew. And let me tell you why. And we get into those facts and circumstances. But timing, Lockwood, is always a good place. You know, once we say, okay, I don't really think I owe this, let's look at it and see, is there a timing issue? Because that could be a clear winner.
This brings two quick questions before we wrap it up with you. And again, we've got Andrew Foster of Harvell and Collins with us this afternoon. And I think this is an important topic too, because it leads to a question I want to ask you about record keeping as well. And I don't want to go too deep in the weeds on that, but it's important. Number one, a quick question on this $35,000 or whatever the amount is still outstanding according to the IRS. What, real quickly, is the potential penalty on this?
Yeah, good question. So obviously what you've got, Lockwood, is you've got a failure to file penalty that would be associated, or sorry, a failure to pay penalty, which would be associated with those funds. And we talked about that. The failure to pay penalty is, 0.05% per month. You got to be careful about that.
Yeah.
The other thing is that there is a substantial understatement of income penalty as well. So, there is two potential penalties that this particular individual could be hit with because of this failure to include gross income on their tax return. So, you're right. The penalties can be hefty, and the interest obviously accumulates as well.
Oh, my goodness. For 6 years, yes. All right. The other question I have related to timing. In instances where you submit a corrected income tax report, let's say you filed it, you suddenly discover you have an error, and you submit a new, what's the word I'm looking for? A corrected
amended return.
Amended return, thank you. Does the date of the amended return begin that clock, restart that clock?
You're exactly right, 100% correct.
Okay.
So you originally file your return, they got 3 years from that date, but if you file an amended return, a 1040X, you're looking at 3 years from the date that the amended return is actually filed at that point in time. So yes, you restart the statute of limitations.
All right, so what we're hearing is you've got a calendar, start making a tax calendar to keep up with. I see what you're... Real quick question for you, Andrew, and it's something that I've been worrying about. Just really personally, I've lived more than 20 years here as an adult. We won't go how much more than 20 years, but we'll leave it at that. But my question is, how long should you keep your tax records for both personal and we'll just slash business? In the case of personal tax records, how long should we keep them? 6 years, or can we get, can we destroy them after 6 years?
I'm good cautious. Question.
Yeah.
So, I would tell you that the audit rules that I just gave you, and the one that I left out is if you just fail to file your return.
Right.
That means the clock never starts, and they can always come back and audit you. or if you fail to sign your return, Lockwood, for example, your statute of limitations period never starts. If you commit fraud on your tax return, obviously, then your timing never starts. But for us, you know, taxpayers that are trying to do the right thing, you know, doing the best we can, obviously don't want to pay Uncle Sam more than we have to. The rule is to stick within these 3 and 6 year rules. So, okay, you know, 3 years is your standard stock general rule relative to audit. 6 years is the extended period. So my advice to everyone is stick to that 6 years just to be on the safe side. Okay. And then, you know, after that 6 year period is elapsed, then you should be good to go. Now, what I tell people out there who have certain carryovers on their returns. So for example, you know, if you've got some carryover losses or you've got some items that can last longer than 6 years, then, you know, my advice is make sure that if you're continuing to carry over that balance, that you keep that return, okay, that you actually claim that loss or claim whatever created those deductions in order to, you know, prove that period in case we ever get into an issue with that carryover. So that's the only exception, I would say.
Outstanding. Phenomenal advice and recommendations from our guest. And I would like to recommend to you Andrew Foster, Harvell and Collins, and that's the law firm, Harvell and Collins, and at the website, easy to find, harvellandcollins.com, and also to call 252 area code 726-9050. Andrew Foster, of course, weekly here on Life and Taxes. Andrew, as always, thanks for your time.